And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
The hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast in which me and two of my ne'er-do-well buddies get together, discuss, dissect, and rate every episode of the way underrated series Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And we are on the cusp. We are at the penultimate episode of season number one right now. I am Paul Spataro, and I'm joined by my new two ne'er-do-well friends, Mr. Sean Engel.
Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Andy Leyland.
Hello, everybody.
God, we almost did an Andy and Michael thing there, almost.
It's almost a Hey Kids Comics introduction.
Creepy.
That one sounded to me like you were, what's his name, from Charlie from Lost. You were going to sing You All, Everybody.
We're not doing a Lost podcast as well.
Oh, no. Sweet God. And, we've got this, then Firefly, then...
the Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
Hardcastle
we're going to do that.
McCormick.
Oh, yeah, the Hardcastle McCormick podcast. Airwolf. Oh, yeah. All of that is coming your way, people.
Look forward to that in about 17 years.
Oh, and then we've got to get Professor Middleton on and do an Equalizer podcast.
I'd actually look forward to that.
As would I.
That one I could go for. I think Professor Allen will be busy doing his moonlighting podcast around then.
Hey, you know you're scraping the bottom of the barrel when we're doing 10 Speed and Gumshoe.
Brown Shoe.
That's the one.
That was Jeff Goldblum and who?
Oh, I don't remember. I just remember
Is
Jeff
anybody,
Goldblum.
Anybody of any note at all? I don't recall.
He reprised his role in a later Stephen Jack and L show. I can't remember who it was. The guy that wasn't Jeff Goldblum, and I don't remember if he was 10 Speed or Brown Shoe or whatever.
Oh, wasn't it Jeff Goldblum and Ben Vereen?
Yes, it was. It was LeVar Burton's dad in Star Trek The Next Generation. So there you go. Star Trek
Connection. So was somebody of note.
Well done, Paul, for linking it back to Star Trek. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm thinking when we get bored enough, you and I'll after we finished all these other seasons, you and I'll do a Magnum podcast.
Oh yeah, I would love to do that, and then a Clint Eastwood podcast.
You know what? His body of work is so large.
We could actually
pull
that off.
Just getting through Rawhide alone, we'll take it.
I don't think we'd bother with Rawhide. I think we'd start with Tarantula.
I seriously think we'd really start with the Dallas trilogy, but whatever.
Yeah.
Just pass over that whole early career stuff.
Yeah, from Dallas to Sniper, a Clint Eastwood podcast.
Oh my God, you're getting me already thinking about it. We got to stop. Stop me,
guys.
On, man.
Star Trek.
Moving on. Moving
Star
on.
Trek.
Move along.
Focus. Home. Focus. No.
Alamarine.
Oh sweet God. I think we've got 180 from the Move Along Home episode coming up today. Do it. Since we're trying to get back into Star Trek, do we have any Star Trek news, or are we just completely...
No, J.J. Abrams did a video interview recently where he talks about Episode 7 and Star Trek 3, but I didn't watch it because it's J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. I read a little bit about it. He said he's glad to see Simon Pegg writing it. He didn't slag it off or anything, so he's still going to be producing it.
It's still a Bad Robot production, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So he's not going to slag it off. He's still going to be making money off it.
Mm-hmm. So, once again, by the time this comes out, there'll probably be more information about it. But you know, again, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what the story is. We know who's directing and who are writing it, but we have no clue what's going on with it. So it's not even in our purview to speculate about the show, I'd say.
No, at the moment we're just in a holding pattern, aren't we? Just wait and see. And we've had better news regarding the writer, so that's looking positive. So let's hope that it results in a good film.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you one tangential Star Trek thing. I got an email from my local library that they're having an anime, basically an anime con at, you know, free anime con at the library, which is a very, very small event. I actually took my daughter to it last year, even though I have no interest in anime. But I saw in the email they have a video message from, I forget what his name is, the guy who plays Kirk in Star Trek Continues, Vic Magnin.
Yeah.
And I started looking at it, and it seems like, oh, he's going to be there for this thing. And I thought, that, you know, what else could make Professor Bill totally Dr. Bill totally jealous, other than I'm meeting his boyhood idol? But then it turns out he's only attending via Skype.
Oh,
he's too big a star to actually come to East Meadow Public Library. And he's apparently a voice actor in a lot of the anime shows.
Hmm. See, I leave all
that's
the
it.
Anime
that's all my news.
I leave all the anime stuff up to Hope. I'll let her handle all that stuff because, you know, it's not that I dislike anime. It's just I have never gotten into it all that much.
No, well, I keep hearing good things about Cowboy Bebop.
That I've never seen. I did appear on Anime Freaks recently because we did they got me to watch three episodes and do it with them, and it was, you know, it's not bad. It's just not necessarily my cup of tea. My children have me watching Attack on Titan.
Yeah, my older daughter is all into that. She's all about that, and I've never watched any. I know it's on Netflix, and she watches it occasionally, but I've never seen an episode of it, so I have no idea what it's about.
They've got me to watch the first couple. It is very, very dark.
Hmm.
The best I can say is it seems like it's almost it's got a tone of The Walking Dead, except instead of having just dead humans that you can kill by taking a screwdriver and touching it to the head. These are giant naked genitalia free monsters that I have not seen yet how they can kill them. So it's very, very dark.
Wow. Genitalia monsters is everything you need to know about anime.
Absent genitalia monsters, so
yes,
that's significantly
free. They have the genitalia of a Barbie or Ken doll.
That's
excellent.
That's significantly better. That's significantly better than anime that I watched. Back in college, one of my friends recommended this thing called Dominion Tank Police. And one of the things they did was, in order to stop these tanks from running around the city chasing these people, they threw out these little balls that blew up into giant, like, enormous-sized phalluses. It was just weird. I don't get anime, is what I'm saying, I think. So.
But we do get Star Trek.
Thankfully,
yes,
we do.
And are we just going to jump into our episode now?
Yes, if I knew who was doing it.
Yeah, I think it's my turn on this one.
All right, okay.
They say he butchered thousands.
He commanded a forced labor camp.
Now millions cry for justice.
Let me know when you hang the Cardassian.
But only one will stand against him.
Look at the hate in her eyes.
The war is over.
How many Cardassians did you kill?
We had no choice.
But Kira's battle has just begun.
He was there. He did it.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Our next episode is Season 1, Episode number 19, Duet, directed by James Conway, story by Lisa Rich and Gene Carrigan-Fauci. It first aired on June 13, 1993, and the story is as follows. A freighter docks at Deep Space Nine so that one of its passengers may receive treatment for a condition called Kalanora. Dr. Bashir is unfamiliar with the condition, but Major Kira recognizes it and informs Commander Benjamin Sisko that Kalanora was only contracted during a mining accident at a brutal labor camp called Galatap. As Kira helped liberate the camp at the end of the Cardassian occupation of Bajor, she asks to greet the passenger. Arriving at the infirmary, Kira discovers that Bashir's new patient is a Cardassian. She has the man arrested as a war criminal, only to find his name, Amon Maritza, is not listed for any crimes. Sisko sees no option but to let Maritza go, yet Kira is adamant. Maritza is a Cardassian who was present at Galatap, which is reason enough. Sisko decides to investigate further and has the man held in custody. Further suspicions arise when Maritza claims he has never been to Bajor, an obvious lie as Bashir's tests confirm that he has Kalanora. Citing a conflict of interest, Sisko asks Kira to remove herself from the case, but her emotional plea and a promise that she will remain professional convince him to let her continue. When she interrogates Maritza, he claims that while he served at Galatep, he was only a file clerk. He claims the atrocities the Bajorans believe occurred at Galatep were an illusion meant to keep other Bajorans fearful of the Cardassians. An investigation corroborates Maritza's story, forcing Kira to cope with the possibility he may go free. Dax offers Kira advice and a sympathetic ear, but cautions that if Maritza is wrongfully punished, then the exercise will have been pointless. A photograph from Galatep reveals that the man being held is not Amon Maritza, but Gul Dahil, the butcher of Galatep, who reportedly murdered thousands of Bajorans. When confronted with this information, the prisoner proudly admits to being Dahil. Kira is shaken. Dahil seems convincing, however, he lets slip the name of Kira's resistance cell during the occupation, information too obscure for him to know. Other inconsistencies in his story also stand out. Gul Dukat asserts that Dahil is dead, buried under one of the largest military monuments on Cardassia, where half the population viewed his body in state, including Dukat himself. Furthermore, Dahil was off-world during the Kalanora outbreak, and thus could not possibly have the disease. Odo asks Dr. Bashir to examine the prisoner's medical history. Kira is dismissive of this and asserts that the prisoner will stand trial. Dr. Bashir learns that Dahil has undergone cosmetic surgery, leading Kira to realize the patient is Maritza, as she initially believed, but he wanted to be recognized as Dahil. Kira confronts the prisoner with this information. Maritza breaks down as he speaks, branding himself a coward. He begs Kira to prosecute him, insisting that Cardassia must be forced to admit its wrongdoings, and that he is as guilty for remaining silent as Dahil was for committing the atrocities. Hence his impersonation of Dahil. He wanted Bajor to give him the trial and sentence that Dahil deserved. Kira releases him, realizing he is a good man, so traumatized and remorseful from his experiences that he would give up his life to make amends. She insists that another murder is not the answer and that too many good people have already died. She will not kill another. Kira and Odo escort Maritza to a ship departing from the station. Maritza laments that now that his identity has been exposed, he cannot bring about change for his people. Kira assures him that his actions were honorable. If his people are going to change, people like him are needed to lead the way. On the way out of the promenade, Maritza is suddenly stabbed and killed by a Bajoran. When Kira demands to know why, the Bajoran echoes her earlier sentiments, being a Cardassian is reason enough. No, Kira realizes, it's not. This was a heavy episode to watch. And I mean that in a very good way. Mm-hmm. This was a character study of not only of Kira, who we want a character study of, but a character we had never met before, never heard of before, really had no interest in, and by the time the episode was over, I was totally enthralled with him. So I just thought this was, Andy's been talking about that there's a five Latinum Bar episode coming up. I'm assuming this is the one.
That would be correct.
And I cannot really find fault with this episode. It's just, it was marvelous.
Yeah, all the way through, I have been saying, I'm not giving anything five, because I know there's one at the end of the season that is five bars of Gold Press Latinum. And even going beyond this, I know that this is a five-bar episode. It's absolutely brilliant from frame one to the end. Even though the ending's a little heavy-handed, it doesn't matter, because it makes the point of the story magnificently. It's two actors in one room with a great script, right, beat the shit out of each other. Harris Yulin is utterly fantastic as Maritza. He elevates Nana Vista just by being there. And she's no slouch. She's not bad by any means, but we have pointed out a couple of times in previous episodes, she's gone a little bit over the top in some places. She is brilliant in this one. The whole point of the show, some people have said, you know, occasionally Star Trek's political subtext is a little bit on the nose, and here they're talking about the Holocaust, quite obviously, but other things as well. You can bring your own reading into it if you want to. But the change of heart that Kira goes through throughout this episode, and then the utter futility of that change of heart by other Bajorans, Yulin's just simply magnificent line delivery at various different points in the episode. You can argue that his plan did require a little bit of jumping through hoops. It's very fortunate that they pieced together all the puzzle exactly as he wanted them to piece it together, but we'll let that go because it's just brilliant. It's everything Star Trek should be. It's everything science fiction should be. It proves you don't need an astronomical budget to do a magnificent parable on what it means to be human within a science fiction framework. And if Harris Yulin didn't win an Emmy for this show, then there is something wrong with the award system, because he's brilliant in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. This show comes definitely a few years after Silence of the Lambs won for best Oscar, one with one essentially the main five Oscars for that, and this has a lot of elements in that. The simplicity of these two characters confronting each other in what they call a sort of fishbowl type episode, where it's just these two going back and forth against each other, is just phenomenal. Like you said, Harris Yulin is just amazing. He elevates the characters of the Cardassians and basically paints them in a way that I think does even more than Gul Dukat in the first episode we saw. He makes them duplicitous. He makes every word that they say deceitful, and just, you're not certain whether you should trust them at all. And yes, Kira is brilliant in this. Her turn from, you know, absolute hatred of what this person did to her understanding at the end is just great. There is not a bad performance.
Her.
Yeah.
I think to me that's the brilliance of this episode. We make that ride with her. We start off with, is she over the top? Is she overreacting? He says he's just a file clerk. You know, is this another Kira's going too far episode? And then his performance when he's found out, and I put that in air quotes, which I'm not an air quote guy, but when he's found out as actually being Gul Dahil, and he's relishing, you know, being finally that he doesn't have to hide who he is, and he's talking about the atrocities with glee, and you grow to hate him and you want to see him killed, and then you find out he really is Maritza, and that he's you know an incredibly noble man, and your heart breaks when he's killed at the end. It's just a wonderful emotional journey. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard people, and this is in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion, there are people who have been comparing this to some of the best Star Trek episodes ever, like to City on the Edge of Forever. And I don't know if I can go that far, but I can say this is probably one of the best Star Trek episodes we've had, definitely this season. Might be, with my recollection, throughout most of the show. This is just a phenomenal, phenomenal episode.
Like Paul says, you go on the journey with him, And the scenes where he describes what he did in that concentration camp and the sheer joy that he puts into his line delivery, that I wasn't just a killer of Bajorans, I was a magnificent killer of Bajorans. And you can see Kira just getting more and more wound up. But we've not mentioned how brilliant Avery Brooks is in this one, playing again the stoic counterpart to Kira's righteous anger. He's the one who keeps his head, and he's the one who goes through looking at the whole thing logically throughout the entire episode. The entire cast is brilliant in this one. I mean, Harris Yulin gets all of the credit because he's essentially the main guest star, and he is brilliant. But the way he turns everything around, it's not just like you mentioned, like Descartes. It's like Garak. You don't trust anything that Garak says simply because of how Andy Robinson plays him. And it's really nice to see the other people playing Cardassians essentially taking that cue from Robinson and going, ah, right, this is the ultimate deceptive race. They may seem like they're silver-tongued and they may seem like they're telling you the truth, but the eye acting by all these people tells a completely different story. And Harris Yulin is elevated into those high ranks by his performance in this one.
And I'm unfamiliar with Harris Yulin outside of this episode, but he's got quite a filmography.
I remember him from being in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
See,
the head of the Watchers Council in Buffy.
The one place that I know him, and I checked him out after I watched the episode to try and find what he has done, because I was just so enamored of his performance. The only thing that I really saw that he was in, he played the judge in the second Ghostbusters movie, the one who was the hanging judge who sentenced, the Ghostbusters had to come in and collect the judge who was scaring around the courtroom. But other than that, yeah, I wouldn't see, again, haven't watched Buffy, so yeah, bad on me.
Well,
yes.
You know why he's good? He's a stage actor, mm-hmm. as were most of the cast of Deep Space Nine.
Well, and you can kind of tell that because he gets to deliver those dramatic monologues so perfectly.
And this is a performance, especially when he is, because of the deception, it's not reality. But when he is revealed as being Guldar Heel, it's totally acceptable that he goes totally over the top because he's not Guldar Heel. He's really Maritza pretending to be Guldar Heel. So therefore, he probably would go over the top there, and it's not like that. It's not an over-emoting performance where you say, "Oh God, look at this! He's really hamming it up." It's right on the money. It's exactly what it should be. It really is. Like I agree with you. He certainly should have been seriously committed for considered for an Emmy for this performance.
But he's also playing the fact that Maritza is just consumed not only by survivor's guilt, but the fact that he did nothing. He was in that concentration camp, and he did nothing to prevent what was happening to those Bajoran people. And it's very easy for us to sit in judgment of him, because we sit at home in our comfortable armchairs watching an episode of science fiction television. But if you put yourself in his shoes, in his skin, if you will, he doesn't come across as being like the other Cardassians that we've seen, in that they're ruthless in their goal. He seems to be of a different stripe to them. And one interesting question that was brought up on the Tor rewatch of this that I thought would be interesting for us to discuss, he feels that his death would somehow bring the Cardassians to accountability and make them see what they did was wrong. But they have to, as a race, think that what they did was wrong. And we've never seen any indication that the Cardassians believe that anything they did was wrong here. So ultimately, what he's trying to do is an exercise in futility. The Cardassians don't think they did anything wrong in what they were doing. So he can't bring them to bear for that until they admit some culpability.
But that's one of the wonderful things about this show, too, is they're not just cookie cutter villains for villain's sake. They do think that they didn't do anything wrong, and they do think that they had an absolute right to take the actions that they did, and they do think that they do clearly look at the Bajorans as sheep and who are meant to be herded, and that this is just the way of the world, and that their actions were not in any way reprehensible. So that's what gives it, you know, the layers to the not only to the performance but to the character. I'm assuming the show bible for the characters, you know, gives them that, you know, those layers and that belief. And then what they did, which you can't give enough credit to, is throughout this series they just kept casting actors who were able to pull it off and not turn it into a one-dimensional or two-dimensional performance and really give us realized characters. Even somebody like this, who's only going to appear for one episode and you're never going to see him again, had such a memorable acting performance and character turn throughout this episode that this is one that just stays with you. And hopefully will continue to stay with me, because I think this was a great performance, and I just want to I want to keep this on my list of all-time favorite Trek episodes, because I think it deserves to be that high.
I think this can go toe-to-toe with the best of the original, because it is just so magnificently written. I honestly don't think Next Gen did an episode as good as this. Even Chain of Command, which tries to be in the same vein, is a little bit too... what's the word I'm looking for? It's too obvious in what it's saying. This has so many different shades of grey to it. At the one hand, you're siding with Kira, and then you go on that emotional journey with her where she changes her mind about the enemy. And it's just, it's brilliantly written, it's brilliantly performed. I think it's Star Trek at its best. I honestly do. Whatever series.
From a writing and performance point of view, I'm not gonna compare it to Chain of Command, because I love Chain of Command, so.
I like that episode.
But when you want to look at it as a single episode with a masterful acting performance and just really, you know, not action so much as emotional consequences, the episode that I line this up with on Next Gen that I think I would compare it to is probably Tapestry. And I know that the stories are totally different, but it really is a one-person character study throughout. Well, what's the one where Picard actually lives an entire life in 20 minutes?
Inner Light.
Inner Light.
Mm-hmm. Inner Light. Something along those lines. That's, you know, even though the story is totally different, those are the ones that I look at more as being in line with this one. And,
yeah.
And it's not, like I said, it's not because the stories are comparable, they're not, but just the fact that it focuses on the acting performance of one person, and even though, you know, obviously Picard is, you know, the star of the entire series, but it's still him being given a chance to just spread his wings and to perform, you know, for one episode in a way differently than he did in the other ones. And in particular in Inner Light, where he's not really even playing Picard, he's playing, what his character name was. The life he takes over and lives. That's where I would put it at the level with, and that's the kind of episode I would compare it to. And those are considered to be the greatest episodes of TNG, or among them.
Mm-hmm. It's surprising. You mentioned that this obviously has Holocaust references, and is very. The storyline is very much about Holocaust denial and all that, and it's surprising this episode came out prior to Schindler's List coming out as a movie. I mean, Schindler's List was known, it was going to be happening, but this dealt with this whole thing of people denying the Holocaust and people, you know, the atrocities that the Cardassians, which are analogs for the Nazis, did to these people. So it's interesting that this came out in a time prior to a movie, to Schindler's List, a movie that dealt with the same sort of aspects.
And even though there's the Holocaust message in this one, unlike so much Star Trek, this one didn't feel like they were beating me over the head with it. It's clearly there, no question about it. But sometimes, like I said, sometimes they seem so ridiculously over the top that it's just, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, I know. Frank Ocean is black on one side and white on the other. All right.
Yeah, this was...
This didn't have that feeling about it.
This benefited more from being a character study rather than a dialogue over, you know, an atrocity. It was one person's... It was one person dealing with something horrible that happened with one person. It wasn't, you know, trying to resolve the entire idea of the Cardassians enslaving people on Bajor and the atrocities that were brought forth against those people. It's just, like I said, a character study on one specific person, and it's a brilliant one.
And I thought they were a little bit subtle on the whole idea of Holocaust denial, where he starts saying, oh, that's just something Guldarheel did to convince the Bajorans that this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they hit on that, and they don't dwell on it. They leave that. That goes away quickly. But that hits on the idea of the Holocaust denial or Holocaust deniers.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his name, Guldarheel. I thought that was that's not quite subtlety, but it was funny in a very, very heavy episode, so I let it go.
Now, I will have to admit, despite this episode being amazing, there were a few things in here that just rubbed me the wrong way. And unfortunately, I have to, because we can't stay here promoting it. You know, it is great, but there was a moment, there was a scene with Quark where we see some of the survivors of Galatap coming up and, you know, getting ready to protest or do whatever with Maritza or Darheel or whoever he's supposed to be. And Quark makes a really bad joke about if the survivors want to gamble. And that really felt out of place to me in this show. That's supposed to be very dramatic and very serious, and that they had to put a jokey bit with Quark in. And that just kind of... It's not going to bring my rating down, but it was just one of those things that felt really out of place to me.
I'm going to defend that slightly.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. But I think that is in there, and I don't think it's in there meant to make you laugh as a viewer. I think that's meant to show you that there are people out there who are insensitive and will say things, even if they don't mean it in a really bad way, but they'll say things that are self-serving or opinionated or something. I think it's just trying to show you. I mean, there are people out there. If you talk long enough in a public group about the Holocaust, somebody will say something stupid. It's pretty much a given.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like a little slice of real life in there. And I don't blame you for being uncomfortable by it. I think you're meant to be uncomfortable by it.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say exactly the same thing Paul just said. It's supposed to be there to show the point of view of the person for whom everything is about them.
Yeah.
And on that level, it works perfectly.
Well, and that's essentially the character that Quark is. He's,
yeah.
He is 100% id. You know, he is exactly, you know, his main purpose is to better himself. So anything that he can do to better himself or to acquire more things is... he's going to overlook even serious things like, you know, the murder and death of thousands or however many Bajoran citizens. So,
and in his very self-centered world, if he went through something horrible, a way of his recovering would be to go and gamble and hang out with Dabo girls and whatever. So he just assumes everybody else is like him.
Mm. All right, then.
That's how I'm interpreting that particular scene. And again, I could understand that it made you a little uncomfortable, because I think that shows that you are a right thinking person, that it made you uncomfortable.
Well, that's surprising. Not too many people think that of me.
For a moment, you were.
Well, another thing that I was surprised of, the people who wrote this episode, Lisa Rich and Gene Kerrigan Fulci, were the same people who wrote Move Along Home. Is that not a dichotomy?
Well,
a blind squirrel.
The Deep Space Nine companion makes it quite clear that Peter Allen Fields and Ira Stephen Burr did a page one rewrite on it.
Okay.
So I'm not taking anything away from Lisa Rich and Jean-Anne Cadogan-Fauci, but you know, the writing staff did take a pass at this episode, and Peter Allen Fields is quoted quite extensively in this companion about him writing it, and even though Ira Stephen Burr doesn't get any credit whatsoever, he says as head writer on the show he deserves a lot of the credit as well for some of Maritza's dialogue. So I'm not saying that their script wasn't as good, but it seems to me from reading this companion that Peter Allen Fields did a page one rewrite on it, and then Ira Stephen Burr gave it back to him with notes that Peter Allen Fields then rewrote it. Because let's not forget, Peter Allen Fields created the $7 million man. So.
Monty Markham rears his head again.
It's wild, Steve! Which is one of the best episodes of that show. Should we talk about the ending?
Let's not gloss over the fact that we had an appearance, a long-awaited appearance by Gul Dukat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. First time since the pilot, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it is. And yeah, I mean, it was a small performance. It was basically a cameo, but it was... and it was through a viewer, not even him actually on, you know, in front of us. But I thought it was well played by him. It was more of what we've seen already and what we're going to see from Mark Alamo. And I think he's sitting there with his little shit-eating grin on that he's always right and everyone should just do whatever he says. And I love his performances always on the show.
And he's seen with Odo.
Oh, yes.
Was brilliant.
Yeah, their interplay, their back and forth, you know, Odo, I so loved playing, you know, that game with you, and Odo comes back. As far as I remember, we only played one game, and you cheated. They are some of the best, you know, like I said, the back and forth between them is just delicious. I love
it. But also showing us the conflict that Sisko is dealing with, because he's got the Cardassian saying, this is not who you think it is, he's not a criminal, you have nothing to charge him with, release him. And then you have the Bajoran saying, well, if Kira says he is, then he is, and you need to give him to us to put on trial and execute. Mm-hmm. And he's dealing with that all the while this is going on. And then his dilemma is, well, I can't leave Kira in charge of this investigation, so he goes to put Odo in charge, but then Kira gives him such an impassioned plea to stay on it and promising that she's going to be fair that he's won over. And there's a lot going on there.
And again, Kira does a magnificent job in convincing Sisko that she's going to be impartial in this, because we're this near the beginning of the season. Were this, you know, where Kira and Sisko were in constant conflict, I don't think that would have happened. You know, if she would have gave this sort of impassioned plea, Sisko still would have given it to Odo but let her help. Sisko trusts her by this point in time in the series to let her do this and let her do it fairly. And I like the fact that all the characters had a chance to just shine throughout this episode. And those are some great, great scenes.
It also begs the question, if he had put Odo in charge, would Odo have gotten to the fact that this was actually Maritza? Now, I like to think he would have, because Odo is a quality constable, but I don't know.
Well, I think he would have eventually tried to contact Gul Dukat to try and find some information about him, and then he would have eventually found out that Dar-Heel was buried in state on Cardassia. That would have, you know, made him investigate further and investigate deeper and try and find whether or not his story was true. Again, he could also be thinking that Gul Dukat was being deceptive, and he'd have to check his channels on that. So I agree with you. I think having Kira, who is responsible for the freeing of these people from the labor camp, gives it more emphasis on her trying to find out what's going on. But I agree with you. I think Odo could have been able to figure it out. It just wouldn't have had as much dramatic aspect to it.
I agree. Should we talk about the ending?
Yes, let's.
I felt that this is the only really weak point of the episode, and it's not, and we are going to spoil it, it's not that Maritza is killed. I mean, to learn the point of the episode, he has to die, essentially, because it's our regular character, Kira, who's gone on the journey and has now changed who she is, and the actual fact that Bajoran killed him, because it's just a Cardassian, was a wonderful bit of reverse bigotry that I thought was great. It was the staging of it. It's all the way through that scene. If you watch René Auberjonois, he's watching everywhere. He's scanning everywhere as him and Kira walk Maritza past through the promenade. And yet he completely misses this guy. He just kind of strolls behind him and stabs Maritza in the back. And how many times in Star Trek have we seen people with wounds worse than that whisk straight to sickbay and survive? And then the way the camera just pans back at the end felt a little bit stagey, even though Kira's last line is brilliant.
I got the feel of maybe this is totally me alone, but I got the Lee Harvey Oswald Jack Ruby feel. during that scene.
Oh, yeah. No.
An assassination that should never have been able to happen, but somehow did.
And yeah, because it does beg the question, why is Odo the only security there? Where's the rest of his crew?
That was the Dennis Miller stand-up bit when he's talking about that when he's sitting. That was some bang-up security. Hey, there's the owner of the local titty bar here. Should I let him in?
So let him go. If we can accept that they have to march him through the promenade and they couldn't just beam him from the cell to the ship, then okay, for dramatic reasons, we'll accept some of this staging. But it did seem very lax of Odo to only have him on security duty.
Well, especially if he, because you had to think that he saw that person sitting right outside the bar, and prior to him being released from his, from the drunk tank, basically, he'd basically thrown every sort of negative slur against this Cardassian that he could have, that he had a grudge against the Cardassians regardless. And when he saw him, Odo should have been on high alert that he might do something stupid. And
But not just him, though, that the station has a high contingent of Bajoran people there. And all of them are going to hate this man.
Well, and they also had the, like I said, with the Quark scene, they had some people from Galatap show up. Why wouldn't Odo think that some of those people might have a grudge against this person?
And he's walking him right through the middle of the promenade where there's any number of places you could have a sniper.
Mm-hmm. Seeing that...
Where they have in the past had snipers.
Yeah. Mm. So that was the only bit where I felt the drama of it superseded character intelligence. Odo's smarter than that.
See, I think they only had that scene because they had to get Morn into the episode.
Yeah.
And that was the only way they could get Morn in the episode, as they made the sort of half circle around the dying body of Maritza.
I was starting to get the nervous sweats that we were going to get through the episode without seeing Morn at all.
Yeah, same thing. I was like, I've been watching. We've seen the bar, we've seen Quark, we've seen everything. No Morn yet. Oh, God, don't let this be the first one. And thankfully, even though they had a shitty resolution to the episode, or just a bad scene, that was where Morn had to show up.
I think shitty resolution is overstating it, honestly. I think it's one of the weaker written scenes. I think maybe they could have done it a little bit more subtly, or had the assassination been a little bit more subtle. I think, like Andy said, it's the drama superseded the logic, because in order to have Kira give that wonderful line at the end, it had to be in a public setting. It had to be, with all the people around her.
Well, and they essentially made the episode circular. Initially, Kira was the one who was all about wanting to assassinate or to have this person be put up for trial and executed. And in the end, she was the one who was the most likely to want to save him, while another Bajoran had the same feelings that Kira did. So,
yes. Yeah, no, I don't agree it's a shitty resolution. I do think it is. They've sacrificed character intelligence for the drama of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the ending is pretty inevitable. I just think, yeah, like Paul said, maybe they could have staged it slightly better. Like a sniper rifle would just completely takes Odo by surprise. I mean, maybe that would have been a bit too on the nose for Kennedy, but I don't know.
But a sniper rifle wouldn't have the,
it wouldn't
the
have
killer
the
right there.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be, he wouldn't, we wouldn't have, yeah. You could have a sniper rifle, and then you could have somebody in the crowd say, oh, good, they got him. He's a Bajoran, he deserves to die. You could have done it that way, just not have the actual killer give that line. I mean, it just, it's funny because, yes, I see the flaws in it, but it takes nothing away from it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely with that. It is nitpicking. It is self-nerd nitpicking over something that isn't important.
I've heard that line before.
I don't know where. It seems vaguely familiar to me.
Huh. So do we have anything else on this? Do we want to give our ratings, even though we're pretty, it's going to be pretty obvious what our ratings are for this?
Oh, no. I'm giving it a 1 star. No, I'm ready.
I'm iconoclast you.
I'm prepared to give it my rating, and I'm going to say I'm still not ready to give 5 stars to anything. I'm sorry. I look, you know, this is the one nice thing about having the breakdown of all the ratings we've given this season. And I look, in the highest rating I've given this season, the only episode I gave a 4.52 was the Negus. And I sit here and I say, was this superior in my mind to the Negus? And honestly, I say it's on a par with, it's as good as, but I don't know that it's better than. So I give this a 4.5.
Oh, is it me?
Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
5.
For all the reasons you've already said.
Yes, pretty much. The Deep Space Nine will do episodes as good as this as we go forward. It will never do one better than this.
You may be right, in which case I'm never going to give a rating higher than a 4.5. But I'm
you're very hard to please.
I'm leaving myself a slight bit of wiggle room.
I think this can go toe-to-toe with anything in the Star Trek oeuvre at all. Original, next gen, whatever. I think this is up there with City on the Edge of Forever. It's up there with Yesterday's Enterprise. It can go toe-to-toe with each of those episodes, I think, as what this show does best when it does it best.
It's Jaws.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to need a bigger station.
I'm going to have to, you know, I can sympathize with you, Paul, about saying how this relates to the highest rated episode we've had, the Negus. They're two vastly different episodes, though. This one is a dramatic piece, while the Negus was more of a comedic piece. They're both superlative. They're both incredibly well done. They both, you know, the Negus does comedy incredibly well. This does drama incredibly well. It's really, really hard to say one is better than the other because it is technically apples and oranges. It's comedy versus drama. But the drama in this is just so good, I can't not give it a 5-bar rating. I agree with Andy. This stands up to Inner Light, Yesterday's Enterprise, City on the Edge of Forever, any of the great episodes of Classic Trek. I think you could put this right in company with them, and I think you would be hard-pressed to say that this shouldn't be ranked up there with those episodes.
I feel so selfish and chintzy now.
Oh, yeah, a 4.5. You were so negative on it, Paul.
At least he didn't give it a 4.73.8.
well, that's right, because we don't have guests.
Yeah, Dr. Bill wasn't here, so he couldn't. And he'd probably change it afterwards. Oh, I wanted to make it a 4.8375.
He was going to give it. He was going to give it 1 star, but we convinced him. Now he's giving it 4.83.
We love you, Dr. Bill. Well, in that strictly platonic way that we don't. So, do we want to do an email?
Yes, good idea.
Incoming transmission.
All right, who's got the email? Do you want?
Do you want me to do it? As soon as Paul did the are you doing the next one?
Yeah, I'm doing the next one.
So you're doing the synopsis for the next one?
Yep.
Right, well, I'll do the email then.
Okay.
Yes, that's an excellent idea to do an email because in the email bag we have an email, and it's from Gene Hendricks, who was also on this show. So basically, do we just invite everyone who emails in?
Essentially,
to the
you know, we're going to have to get what was his name?
Mai. He's going to have to be on the show.
Yeah, Mai, you'll have to be on the show. Oh, the guy who's the postman? Is that Dave?
Oh, no, Dewey.
Dewey, yes. I have to get Dewey on
which,
the show.
Which I am once, whenever we discuss him, to go, Dewey!
Gene Hendricks emailed in about Vortex. Andy, Sean, and Paul, I approve of the ordering of the names there. First off, thank you for acceding to my demands. I mean, having me on the show. It was a great time. Well, it was great to have you, Gene. Thank you for joining us. Now, onto the episode at hand. I remember when I first watched Vortex, I felt that it was a bit of a stretch for Odo to believe a proven liar so much. He never gives Quark the benefit of the doubt, and at least he tells the truth sometimes. Having rewatched it, in order to keep up with the show, my opinion hasn't changed. I understood Odo's loneliness, but for that to overcome his good judgment is just a bit too much of a stretch for me. He does a good job of laying the groundwork for the later changeling stuff, however unintentionally, and I like Odo's sense of right and wrong being pretty absolute. I think that we're solidly in Casablanca mode, as Sean said, with Odo as Louis and Quark as Rick, which I love. I agree with Dr. Bill that the characterization of Croden wasn't consistent throughout. He basically did things because the plot demanded it, and that was it. I would have much rather that he was an outspoken defender of the underclass, or a despicable con man. Trying to straddle the line between these two, much less having us believe he was going from one to the other, is just too much for me to swallow. And that was from Gene, host of the Hammer Strikes podcasts, the Quantum Cast, Anime Freaks, and lots of other things.
And to Gene, I respond, yes.
I do too.
Yeah, I have to agree. The character of Croden, he was so ill-defined. If he's supposed to be this con man, why in the end is like, oh, I've got to save my daughter, and why is Odo buying into this line of BS that he wouldn't, you know, if Quark tried to push it over on him, he'd just laugh it off and slap Quark and irons. It didn't make much sense, but it helped establish the idea of the changeling race and, you know, them being from the other side of them being from the Gamma Quadrant. And I guess some of the little seeds that they put in here that get expanded on in later episodes is nice, but other than that, average.
Yeah, you were our negative, real negative on that episode. Because I'm just looking at it. I gave it a three. Andy gave it a 3.5. You gave it a 2.
Hmm.
So you were our Vortex hater. And Bill gave it 2.753872.
Now wait. No, I've got it. I gave it a 3.5, and Andy gave it a 2.
Oh, you know what? My mistake. I apologize. I'm looking at the wrong column.
Well, there you go.
No, Andy was our negative Nelly.
Yes, sorry, I do apologize. I've made up for it.
Andy,
this
who
week.
Gives away fives on episodes like they're going out of style.
This is the first five.
Well, if you want to look at it that way, you want to be just look at it in a vacuum, sure.
Before we wrap up, I wanted to mention one more thing. Steve Rogers, not the Captain America Steve Rogers, but Steve Rogers, one of the writers to a lot of our shows, has told me about a website that he's associated with. Let me pull that up here real quick. It's called Place to Be Nation, and I think it's placetobenation.com. If you go to that website, one of the writers on that site is doing a week-by-week review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and he's going through all the episodes, giving his opinions of them and everything. So if you want to go check out that site, Steve gave it to us. It's placetobenation.com. Go ahead and check that out if want a sort of secondary look at Star Trek Deep Space Nine from maybe someone else with differing opinions than we have. Or maybe the same opinions. Who knows?
No, honestly, I would prefer they have different opinions, just because otherwise it gets boring if everybody agrees on everything.
Yeah. Okay. So. Truncating silence and Andy.
What are we doing next time?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Don't just listen to them. Put your faith in the hands of the prophets.
All right, there we go. We'll be back in 2 weeks, everyone. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I never know if you're going to end this with the next time or if we're going to do a bye.
I prefer we do the next time and then we say goodbye. But right. I don't know. There's no structured format to this, for the love of God.
Is there a structured format to anything we do?
No.
visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sorry about that.
Take 2.
This is not Back to the Bins.
Once I finish up my show, I'm going to have so much time to do stuff, so I'm going to start watching stuff. I'm not even caught up on, like, regular shows. I'm behind on The Flash. I'm behind on Constantine. I'm behind on Agent Carter. I didn't see the one with the Howling Commandos, I guess, last week. So I've got to, I've just got to find some time.
By the way, excellent episode.
I'm really liking Agent Love Carter.
I think it's the best one so far. I think the show's starting to hit its stride.
You know, I
don't want Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. back. I just want more Agent Carter.
Same here.
You know, I did another guest spot on that, the two guys talking.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, yeah.
And, he's doing Agent Carter now. And that's what I said. I said, Agent Carter is so good that I'm not sitting there waiting for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to come back.
Yeah.
Well, is it, though? Do you think it's that good because they know they only had 8 shows? They're not having to do 20 or 22 or however many Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does. They've got 8.
Yeah, let's the fact that they're not padding it helps. Mm. The only criticism I have of the show, two criticisms. One is I thought they laid it on a little too thick early on with the whole misogyny aspect of things. I know it was like that in the 40s, but, I get it. they just keep doing it over and over again. But now it seems like she's earning their respect, so now we're getting the payoff for all of that. But the other aspect of it is I would just love if they put in a little bit more in the way of Easter eggs. There's just quite enough.
Are you not a little bit bored of that?
No, and I don't think
all right, okay. Maybe it's just... Maybe it's just me then, who's like, this is Easter eggs in trumping story, which is the reason.
But
I
don't want to. It's got to be well written. It's got to be in there, and it's got to be in there in a way where if you see the Easter egg, fine, and if you don't, it doesn't affect your ability to enjoy the show.
Hmm.
It's got to be done, put in there well.
Yeah, see, that's why I stopped Gotham. It just felt like a bunch of Easter eggs in search of a reason for being.
Whereas I'm watching Gotham, and it's actually gotten better as it's gone along, but I hate the aspect of, okay, Batman, the entire Batman universe is going to be put together and have a whole history before Batman even exists. I don't like
that. Yeah. No, I'm not interested in a Gotham before Batman. Do you know what I mean? If they were actually doing Gotham Central, what it's like to work in a police department where there is a Batman and all this weird stuff going on, I'd probably enjoy it a lot more because you wouldn't even have to see much of Batman. Mm-hmm. Even if
you don't have to see any
TV
of Batman,
show.
You could have him as an urban legend.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not interested in it beforehand. And I just, the impression I got from the first 3 episodes was it's lots of little name checking for me as a comics fan to go, ooh, they just name check Cobblepot. Ooh, look, the Scarecrow or whatever. Yeah. But I don't care before Batman shows up. If Gotham is a mess before Batman and Jim Gordon succeeds, then there is no reason for a Batman. So essentially you're watching a show where Jim Gordon can't succeed in cleaning up the city until Batman shows up. But you're never going
to
get that.
And we have to wait
show.
About 12 years because Batman.
Yeah. So, I mean, the comics chronology was always the death of the Waynes caused the spiraling of Gotham. And Jim Gordon can't succeed in this show. So you're watching a show where the end point is never going to happen. Which is even worse than Smallville, because at least with Smallville, you knew at some point he was going to be Superman. So there was going to be an end game and you were going to get some cathartic release from that ending. But with Gotham,
I'm not going out far enough to worry about the fact that he's not going to win. Which your point is very well taken. I hadn't even really thought about that. I don't like the Smallville aspect of it though, where, you know, we have the Penguin. We know who Poison Ivy is. We know who Catwoman is. We know this just, it's like the Spider-Man chapter one thing where everything has to be interconnected. And I just don't like that. You know, there's got to be just a slight bit more randomness in the life.
Yeah, not everything has to be linked. The Joker didn't have to kill Bruce Wayne's parents.
Yeah, I hated that.
Yeah, so did I.